Thank you. I'm going to call to order the 13 February 2023 meeting of the Clallam County PUD Public Utility District. And at the moment, so do we have any public comments at this time?
Real quick, Commissioner Wendell, excuse me, I received correspondence from Commissioner Pascal that he'll be unable to attend today.
Okay. He will not be here. Is he okay?
Yeah.
Any agenda revisions, or that was it?
I'm not sure there's any public comment.
Oh, we got public comments. I can't see.
No public comment.
Okay. All right, no public comments at this time. So, and any agenda revisions?
Yes, I do have one agenda revision. After public comment number two, the commissioners will hold an executive session to discuss litigation or potential litigation with legal counsel pursuant to RCW 42.30.110, subsection 1I.
When are we going to do that? Where?
Right after item number 10, public comment number
okay.
two, right before we adjourn.
Okay. Do we expect to take action after this?
No, we expect it to last about 30 minutes and no action.
Okay. Any other revisions?
None from me.
Okay. Let's take a look at the approval of the consent agenda. We have the minutes of the January 23rd, 2023 regular meeting, minutes of the February 8th, 2023 special BPA work session, claim vouchers for January 23rd through February 6, 2023 for a total of $5,491,417.30. We must have paid BPA.
Mm-hmm.
Payroll vouchers for the period of January 16th through January 31st, 2023, and removal of delinquent accounts from February 2023 active accounts receivable in the amount of $3,683.85, including 30% collection fee. I hear a motion to approve the consent agenda.
So moved.
Yes. Yes, and I'll second the motion. So all in favor of the consent agenda, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Okay, the consent agenda is hereby approved. Business items. Number A is the acceptance memo for cost increase to agreement number 200334. And Bowen, you're going to give us that?
He's going to put the mics on.
Okay, so staff requests a motion, second, and a vote to approve an acceptance memo for cost increase to agreement number 200334 for pre-construction engineering services with Kennedy Jenks Consultants, Inc. This project is for the LUD3 infrastructure upgrades due to additional stormwater planning work required by the City of Port Angeles to complete a short subdivision. The original scope of work requires a schedule extension to February 28th, 2023, and additional engineering service costs of $6,095 for a total project cost of $108,500.
Okay, thanks. Any questions or discussion?
Well, first I'll move to approve that, and I do have a couple of questions. I think we shouldn't we have a motion before we end
up? Okay, I second the motion.
So I don't have any issues or concern, but this looks like something that predates my tenure. I was just wondering if you could tell me a little bit more about what the project is.
Sure. So lower LUD3 pump station is in a pretty geologically unstable area near Lindbergh Road. We need to relocate that. So we've entered into this contract with Kennedy Jenks for the design, that portion of work. We're going to need to do some negotiation with the City of Port Angeles here in order to revise our wholesale water agreement. So at this time, I think we're going to put this is a next kind of it's this project, the city, and then we'll proceed with the final design phase and construction for the project.
All right. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All in favor of the motion? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion is passed. Thanks, Bob. Okay, the next item is invitation to bid number 230803, recommendation to solicit bids. The board will consider authorizing district staff to publish notices inviting sealed proposals from pre-qualified electrical contractors for a transmission pole replacement project.
Commissioners? Staff recommends the district to authorize the solicitation for formal bids from pre-qualified electrical licensed contractors for the replacement of wood transmission poles with fiberglass transmission poles that carry distribution, fiber optic cable, and foreign transmission and communication attachments located along Lordson Boulevard from Ray Street to Liberty Street, which is DPA Port Angeles. The replacement work is to coincide with the scheduled maintenance outage at McKinley Paper Company. Planned outage is scheduled for June 12th between 12 noon to June 15th at 11 a.m. A portion of the project requires the McKinley Paper Company transmission line to be de-energized in order to transfer both district and McKinley-owned transmission lines to the new poles while de-energized. Details more fully set forth in the invitation to bid attached. The engineer's estimate is $362,669. Staff requests a motion, second, and a vote to authorize district staff to publish a notice in the Seattle Daily Journal of Commerce and by such other means as determined by staff to be prudent, inviting sealed proposals for pre-qualified electrical contractors for the work.
Have we had any supply chain issues with these poles in the past or now?
All of the equipment has been purchased for this project, and nearly all of it is on site.
Okay, good. Any questions or comments?
I have a comment, but we can get through the motion. It's kind of only tangentially related. It has to do with the letter.
Okay. I hear a motion for invitation to bid number 230803, recommendation to solicit bids.
I'll move as presented. I'll move to approve as presented.
Okay. I'll second that. Yes.
So, I have an interesting letter from a Mr. Eugene Boyce. He appears to be a retired lineman, and he was reminding me that he had called me when I was running for office, and he was very concerned about the trend of replacing all the old cedar poles with fiberglass. He was absolutely certain that wood is much better for reasons I don't fully understand. So my question or my comment is, could somebody provide me with some basic background? I mean, it seems to make perfect sense to me that we transition to these poles, but I'd like to be able to offer them a thoughtful response, or maybe if somebody else wants to read the letter.
Staff can respond if you'd like it.
Yeah, you know, I just think it'd be worth to. He wrote it really long, and it's a little bit hard to read, but it'd be worthwhile to at least share with him why.
The PUD standardized on transmission poles, fiberglass, going to fiberglass, what, John, 15, probably 20 years ago? 20 years ago. Linemen generally tend to not like it as much because they can't climb them. They're better from a lifestyle or lifespan standpoint. They've only been in production for in the neighborhood of 30 to 40 years, so nobody really knows what their life expectancy is. But expecting 100 years, most of the manufacturers advertise 60 to 80. Expecting 100 years out of a wood or a fiberglass pole is not at all unrealistic, whereas the industry standard for a wood pole is 50 years.
But these poles can't be climbable. You have to have a truck to buck it up.
That's correct.
Okay.
No, that was it. And those were his comments and concerns. I would just like to provide a fair response. Appreciate it.
I'm happy to offer more if I can help.
Okay. So do we we've had a motion, so all in favor of invitation to bid number 230803, recommendation to solicit bids, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, the next is a special meeting follow-up discussion with, let's see, we got John and Sean and Tyler on deck here.
Yeah, so... as I mentioned in my correspondence memo that's included in your guys' board packet, staff is just seeking clarification on a number of topics And so John, Tyler, and I sort of had a discussion about what some of the questions are that we feel are most pressing. And I included those in my memo to you. And the next agenda item, the BPA response to October letter, is sort of intertwined in some of this stuff too. So those two items might be combined together here as we go through this discussion. So inherently, you know, staff, we're problem solvers, right? We know how to run and operate this distribution utility, whether it's capital projects or O&M or emergencies. We're very good at what we do. But what we're talking about here on some of this stuff is at an order of magnitude significantly higher than what's ever been proposed at this utility. And instead of projects in the $1 million range, we're talking about things in the tens of millions of dollars range, which brings significant risk to our ratepayers. And so we would like to fully understand the board's desire for how to proceed forward with some of these items. And, you know, one of the things that has been brought up a lot lately is the word resiliency. And we need to fully understand what that means for the board, because, you know, resiliency might mean to you that we get completely away from BPA and have all of our generation here on the peninsula. Is that what resiliency means to the board? BPA has historically had very good reliability. The issues primarily occur when there's an outage, which has more to do with our terrain and topography. A tree falls into the line and there's an extended outage, but their generation is up and running and ready to serve. And so we need some clarification from the board on some of these questions. And so if you don't mind, I think we were just going to kind of go through them, and maybe you guys could address them and let us know what your preference is as far as a path forward.
Yeah, sounds good.
So the first question that was in my memo was had to do with consulting. And is it the board's desire to seek a consultant to kind of dive into some of the feasibility of North Olympic generation greater than 200 kW. We can't really do anything until the next contract, but if we are going to do something, we need to know soon so that if we have to dedicate a resource for the next contract, then we're well-versed and equipped to do that. So, you know, and again, a lot of these questions are going to sort of overlap that decision. So I don't know if you want me to pose all the questions first or if you just kind of want to give your thoughts on a question by question basis.
Well, there's a lot to digest here, and I think, you know, the process that, you know, we kind of laid out is to get ideas from the public, which we got. We got some of that stuff in here, our ideas and so forth, and then kind of kick that around with the staff and you know, see what not necessarily, oh, we got to make a decision, this one, but let's see what this is telling us in terms of possibilities. You know, we're reacting to the public here, a lot of public comment about, you know, wanting to see this kind of resiliency or stuff like this. And so what's in a resiliency initiative look like, and what does it cost? Because I think ultimately we need to take this back to the to the public, and, you know, and talk about it. You know, so okay, guys, we had this meeting, we had this input, and here's what we did with it. Anyway, that's sort of my initial just kind of blast. Ken, what do you think? Or, you know, maybe I'm wrong about, you know, approach here.
Well, first off, I do not imagine not signing the provider of choice contract. You know, we would not be guaranteed the federally mandated lowest price for energy without a contract.
Agreed.
And, you know, and as far as resiliency, I don't imagine in today's world, probably even in my lifetime, you know, being able to generate enough electricity on the North Olympic Peninsula to sustain us. And if we did, it would still become part of the greater system, I assume. To me, it's taking advantage of the technologies we have today you know, primarily PV solar, and you know, I still think wind's a possibility on the peninsula. To mitigate risks that we face from severe weather events and catastrophic events. That's my primary interest. And it seems like, you know, and it seems like staff is actually working on some of these things, everything from augmenting existing community solar, exploring opportunities for more solar. I mean, the rooftop solar, residential rooftop solar we have today is an asset in that regard. And I think, you know, exploring smart grids and microgrids and smart grid technology, which we're also deploying, right? I mean, the AMIs are part of that future as well. So, so to me, that's what resiliency is. You know, we have safe, reliable, affordable power from Bonneville. But, you know, when the power goes out, we're sort of stuck here and we have almost no recourse. You know, we don't have a loop, a transmission loop around the peninsula. And we have had some complete outages across the county. And, you know, and I just feel like that we need to do everything we can. You know, for me, it's about being vigilant and forward thinking and forward looking for any and every opportunity that we can to provide that security, primarily to mitigate, you know, risk.
So staff's, you know, what we've been operating on up to this point is that we're going to sign the BPA contract. It's sort of a foregone conclusion at this point. It's going to be a minimum of 19 years. The tiered rate methodology is staying. They're going to reshuffle the deck on the system size. It's going to be somewhere between 7,000 and 7,500. And if the sandbox proposal is adopted, you know, we'll go into the contract with headroom according to the estimates, but we have a load that might be coming back that might not make it so that we have headroom. So what we've sort of been operating under the assumption is that, okay, we'll take as much of the tier one rate as we can, and then we'll look for ways to mitigate our exposure to tier two. And whether that's buying into a solar farm in eastern Washington or some other opportunity that presents itself, that's sort of what we've been under the guise of operating, that's what staff's going to do. But if it's different than that for the commission and you want us to look into generating on the peninsula, that's a whole new business model for this utility. We're a distribution utility. We don't have any generation right now. And so at what rate impact is the board comfortable, you know, having that resiliency, having generation? And that's the stuff that we really need to fully understand what your level of commitment is to that so that we can work on those types of projects and come back to you with estimates for impacts as far as rates are concerned.
Well, yeah, well, 2 points for me is, yes, I agree with what Ken said and what your proposal is about. We're not going to back out of a BPA agreement. It's simply inconceivable for us to be able to do that at this point in time. But there may be those opportunities in there, those small things that we can do that lead us toward more resiliency, whether it's a small solar operation or whatever it is. But I guess my view was is that we ought to try to position our PUD to keep leaning forward wherever we possibly can to on small initiatives or medium sized or large ones if the money's out there. See, that's the thing. You know, there's a lot of federal money floating around with these grants and just normal federal programs. And what I guess I'm interested in seeing is taking this stuff and saying, okay, what is out there that might, you know, be able to help finance some of this stuff, or is it just, you know, there's just nothing and it would have to come out of our pocket. But even if it comes out of our pocket, so to speak, you know, we owe it to the folks that, you know, that gave us, you know, came in here and testified and so forth, these are the things that you asked for, and this is what it's going to cost. And so, you know, if we were to go this way, this is the ramifications and so forth, and kind of let them understand how our pain as commissioners and so forth is to, you know, that this stuff isn't cheap. But just because you have to pay a little more or you may have to dip into a reserve or do something to do it, it's a decision that
people ought to be able to see what's on the table and say, you know, that's worth doing. That's worth trying. But I think this is a little too early yet at this level of documentation to make that decision on any one of these things, unless, I don't know about you, Ken, but, you know, I'm just now digesting this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not entirely sure what question one is really asking or suggesting, to be honest.
Basically, question one is if the board desires to bring generation to the North Olympic Peninsula, we would advise hiring a consultant to tell us what's the most feasible opportunities to bring here and what the cost would be. We're just not equipped to really do an analysis on.
So are we talking utility scale generation? I mean, that's not something I have imagined is possible today in any practical way. Short of a small modular nuclear reactor.
Yeah, and I guess that's where we were seeking clarification. What exactly was it that the board was designing as far as local generation? If it's not utility scale, and if what path we're down is the right path, looking at, you know, potentially augmenting our tier two, then that's how we've been operating.
Let me ask this: do you call utility scale? You know, effort here, you know, having an incentive program for rooftop solars and battery or something, some gimmick or some deal we cook up where, you know, people can, you know, put in solar and batteries or something and get an incentive or something like that?
Yeah. Well, the incentive would be when we start to do time of use rates, that would be where the incentive would come in.
Yeah, what?
That's where the incentive would come in. If we transition to a time of use rate structure.
When we have to replace some. Is that what you said?
No, like if a customer had a solar with a battery backup, they would be incentivized through their rate through time of use.
So it's strictly that approach is the only way to get at it.
Yeah, excuse me, Sean, let me volunteer. The concern is basically the large scale generation beyond the 200 kW limit from BPA. I believe that question is specific to that point.
Right.
We will have an opportunity post-2028 to bring on such resources, but as part of the process, it is a little bit outside of our current wheelhouse to have all the understanding necessary to bring such projects online without outside consultation. So I think the board, based on your comments, has already answered that question. And there's no misalignment between current staff understanding and the board.
Mm-hmm.
Would okay. So looking into this stuff, just, you know, kind of taking a look at what's possible at various scales seems like, you know, something we could do.
Correct. So we can do scoping. As a matter of fact, I have a presentation prepared that is probably illustrative to the issues we have, that is conveying information. Resiliency, federal grants, all the energy issues, including new BPA contract, are very much interconnected in their impact. We have grant windows to consider if we're going to bring on large resources. Those windows will close prior to the post-2028.
So we have
some decisions that probably need to be presented as information for your future consideration. I think we illustrate that in the presentation I'm about to give.
You know, another layer to this, aside from resiliency or any energy independence, is also the economic development side of it. I mean, In fact, I learned this, I knew this already, but at the Energy Northwest meeting I went to a couple of weeks ago, that was actually the topic discussed in depth, you know, about new large single load demands or needs for industry, you know, not even here, not just here, but all over the state. And EPA's attorney basically said, you know, if anybody comes knocking on your door asking for cheap energy, tell them it's not here in Washington State. You know, it just doesn't exist anymore. Which means that you have to have system augmentation, I would assume. So I guess for me, you know, even that's tied to what we're talking about in the big picture, long term. And I guess, again, you know, for me, I'm absolutely certain we are living in transformational times. The world, you know, has changed, and change occurs suddenly, and then it accelerates rapidly. And I do believe that, you know, we're on the path to electrification of everything, you know, quite honestly. So if the pundits are right, you know, and their predictions of what the demand increase is going to be by 2050, I just don't see how the existing system, you know, is going to be able to support the need, which means there has to be more generation somewhere. And I guess I feel like that's an opportunity for us to look forward to see how we might fit. Now, speaking of, you know, generation here, I'm assuming we're talking, when I think of utility scale, I'm thinking of, you know, bulk generation, something that would be sold out of the area as well as utilized here. But my understanding is we don't even have the transmission infrastructure to do that today. Don't you have to have like 345 kV to be able to transmit large volumes of energy in our services?
Well, it depends on scale. Keep in mind, McKinley Paper, they're generating 6.5 average megawatts, and it is being sold externally through the BPA system, 230 kV.
But they can't operate as an island, is my understanding. Power goes out, their ability to generate power goes away.
They do not operate as an island normally. Their system can be configured per the information I have from City of Port Angeles Engineering that, yes, they could operate as an island if they configure their system and provide the excitation, which their turbines can do. So it's not a microgrid configuration, but if the power is going to go out for weeks, I believe they have the capability to provide substantial loads, critical loads in Port Angeles. And that information is coming from the engineering department of Port Angeles Utilities.
Does for that to happen, for McKinley to operate as an island, does that require more investment in the facility?
It requires McKinley agreeing to do so without contract. In an emergency, which is probably, you know, a good discussion for Port Angeles to have with McKinley, a little bit outside our scope. So basically, ready for one more presentation, or do you have more questions?
Well, let me just make a couple more comments in general. I mean, maybe these will be answered. But, you know, the special meeting we had, first off, I was surprised how at the attendance. I mean, we had all of the key stakeholders here. We had a pretty broad and interested audience. And again, you know, I understand that running for office is very different than being elected, and what you learn once you're on the inside is almost always different than what you're thinking or what you're telling people on the outside. But, you know, knocking on a lot of doors around the county, people do care about this stuff and are concerned, you know, about their long-term security. So I think, you know, finding, making sure we have policies and goals, you know, to achieve some, you know, real resiliency, I think is important, and I think people care. You know, the other thing I want to say is I think it's okay to ask questions and challenge the authority. BPA is sort of our energy authority, right? I mean, they're the ones we're dependent on. And it doesn't seem to me they're as transparent as they could be, including about costs. You know, my biggest concern, you know, and when we tell people we want to keep the rates as low as possible, what is that? What does that actually mean? Because to me, it seems like costs are just continuing to go up and up and up. And what we think of as cheap, affordable hydropower today, I'm not convinced that will be the case in another 10 to 20 years. So again, it just seems like there's more and more reasons to consider how we could be, how we get access to power as affordably as possible. So one of my concerns about the BPA post-2028 contract is, and again, this is my understanding, is that if we begin to acquire energy outside of the BPA system to meet, you know, a new growth demand or to ensure our own resiliency, even including developing, microgrid, generation resources, that we would then be deducted from our contract high watermark level of allocation of power, which again, puts us in a vicious cycle. You know, mm-hmm. It's like the harder we're trying to grow economically or secure prosperity, and as much as we want, you know, energy stability, and this is an issue for water systems too. It's not just power that we're talking about. These are important issues across the entire utility front. So it just seems to me that, you know, that a 20-year contract could very easily put us at risk 10 years out. Now, maybe I'm just naive and don't fully understand all these things enough, which is entirely possible. Probably is part of the case to some extent, I admit. But those are the things that concern me and bother me about, you know, being locked into such a long-term contract. Yeah. So I just wanted to, you know, make sure you understand where I'm coming from.
No, that's fine. And actually, you pinpointed a major problem with augmentation for Tier 2. We did an analysis for any conservation effort or new resources. It does affect your Tier 1 availability under the next contract unless they build in some conditions to the next contract. And BPA would have to credit at approximately 40% of the generation any conservation or any new dedicated resources, such that our utility, you know, 15, 20 years down the road, when they set new Tier 1 allocations, is not penalized. But make the effort and develop, while a comparable utility does nothing, will transfer your Tier 1 to that utility unless something balanced is in place. And that is something that I've already presented to our BPA executive account team.
With the, I think I understood what you just said. You know, one of the other things I thought about on the letter, the comments that Ryan Neal sent around for the utilities to comment on before he submitted them, was his discussion about Port Angeles specifically, and that their demand is way down and that they're at a risk of losing that headroom, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it occurred to me after I had made my comments in the mail that, you know, if that were to happen to Port Angeles, it doesn't just hurt them, it hurts the county generally. So is that a little, I mean, could
Port Angeles lost load. They lost the mill. And so their demand went way down. And so what John was referring to was more on the conservation side.
But also dedicated.
But also on, yeah, dedicated resources.
Yeah, Port Angeles used to have in excess of 50 megawatts to serve the old mill. And the new mill is coming online more on the order of 25, maybe 30 megawatts, which will be 20% less than what they had, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm. I guess it just seems to me that the BPA is scrambling to meet everyone's contract high water, you know, adjusted for 2023, and they're taking from wherever they can and reallocating.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that just seems like for us, it just keeps making, you know, economic prosperity and opportunity and even resiliency to some extent harder and harder to achieve. So,
total agreement.
Well, and if you accept what we just said about BPA and these contracts, yes, we're going to inevitably sign these things, then what recourse do you have to deal with BPA's price structure that we don't know what, you know, what it's going to look like in 5, 10, 15 years? And so I guess this is where the angle of, well, what do you do? What sort of initiatives do you take with BPA, like that letter we wrote, to get their attention and try to get some sort of mechanism going, a team or whatever, that will look at the cost side of BPA's operations? And what I mean by that is, what do these dams really cost? They have a – you know, BPA has spent millions on an asset management program. It is not literally hooked up to a dam. It's 1,000 little widgets, and we know the asset value of each one of those widgets, but we don't know the asset value of that dam. And so you can never tell whether you're in a situation where you've got a product that's delivering at an economical rate of return or not. So those are examples of the kind of things, I guess you say, well, what else, if we can't deal with a 2028 contract, what's left? You got to, you know, look at, take whatever opportunity you can to find another opening. And I guess maybe I didn't finish reading this, but I don't know if we, you know, if got that in there is something to do. You know, I've talked to WAPAG about it, Ryan and Russ Schneider, and they agree. Yeah, we need a there ought to be a team of PUD folks that it's, you know, staff, you know, tech folks and a couple of commissioners that, you know, can go in and kind of get inside of BPA and more importantly, the Corps and Bureau's head. And in my discussions with the Corps of Engineers, they're not really opposed to that kind of thing. They've been pretty open, you know, with information and so forth. So anyway, I guess I'm just rambling on here about, you know, what can we do? And this is a great, you've got some stuff down here, but, you know, I think it needs to be massaged some and kind of looked at in terms of scaling, which, you know, what are this, you know, what's the, could, we've got a 30 kilowatt system out here. Okay, what's 100 kilowatt that, you know, going to cost us these days or in 5 years or something like that? And should we just go ahead and invest in it? Even though it doesn't, you know, maybe the numbers right now don't look right. Well, hell, they didn't look very good 5 years ago. If you'd have looked at this stuff, you'd have said, my God, it's pointless. So, anyway, I'll pause for a minute. Can go.
Okay. You know, the memo makes me realize, you know, words matter. And so some of the discussion obviously triggered some serious concern, maybe even some anxiety on staff's part on what the Board of Commissioners had in mind. And for me, again, I think I've kind of said this, I certainly don't imagine any radical change. You know, I'm not an energy expert, but I'm smart enough to know that we're fully dependent on BPA. And hydro is incredibly important to our energy portfolio. I told John and I were talking last week that I think it's even going to be more important with the incorporation of variable energy resources because of hydro's ability to ramp up quickly and confirm that non-dispatchable load, I think that's how you would put it. You know, in answer to these questions, I do not think we should, you know, hire a consultant that is outside of the current budget, but I do think that's something we should begin talking about and maybe consider in the next budget cycle. I think the answer to a couple of these questions is I think we should start thinking about and spending a little time and investing a little money to see what the future actually might look like.
Right.
I mean, I sent Sean and John an email earlier this week after I had a call with Melanie Roberts, which was the result of me talking to her at the Energy and Northwest Legislative Reception and suggesting that maybe we have a special meeting or a series of meetings with PNNL's help and maybe the NODC as well on talking about, with staff's, you know, input, of course, staff leading it probably, but to talk about what the energy future might actually look like and what some of the possibilities are. So I do think it would be worth investing time. You know, as staff has time, I mean, you guys are all really busy. I don't ever want to, or if I ever do, make a suggestion that you think you have to take that's going to keep you from doing your day jobs. Make sure you let me know, because that's never the intent. I know you're busy. But I think it's worth investing some time as we go forward into some of these questions. You know, one question four is the question that I spent a lot of time planning to run for office to make sure I understood what the difference is between load quality utility and a block or slice block. And my first reaction in reading those differences is, why aren't we in block or slice block? As I learn more, I understand why we're not. And there's risk in taking either of those paths forward. But I guess it would still be worthwhile exploring that and making sure, you know, we know where there's a threshold where it might begin to make a difference. And again, I only suggest that because of how the energy landscape seems to be evolving and changing. We may not have a choice but to shop for power. And then, I don't know. I mean, so I think it would be worth investing a little time and maybe at some point a little money on that as well. And then question five, I think, you know, the tribes are going to be really important that we partner with and work on some of these questions too. I mean, they have tremendous resources. You know, the Jamestown Tsleil-Waututh tribe in particular, I mean, they're really good partners and our neighbors and friends and almost always have you know, a strong path forward to finding resources to invest in the community. So I don't know if that helps. I'm,
It does, and I think that you are right. Maybe staff read the room a little bit incorrectly in how some things were conveyed to us. And so I'm thank you for the clarification. It's helpful.
I think it's interesting, and I think Brian Neal mentioned something to this effect, but, you know, part of my takeaway with my first Energy Northwest meeting is there's a lot of people talking about these same issues, maybe not exactly in the same context that we are talking about that we're facing them, but it seems to me, I mean, utilities across the region are, you know, concerned about all these same issues. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's my take, talking to especially the PUDs in our class size, you know.
Yeah.
Talking to those commissioners and so forth, it's you know, it's a genuine concern, but at the same time, you know, I hate to say this, but their out is, well, it's 6 years off in the future. I may be retired by then, you know. And right. I'm being cynical, but on the other hand, you know, it's
somebody else's problem, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's typical. That's just human nature. But anyway, I think, you know, your business items under here, C, D, and E, you know, they all are, we're talking about all these three things at one time here, which is fine.
And speaking of D, the questions 6 and 7 are pertinent to John's presentation here. So if you don't mind, I'll have him give that real quick, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead, John. So just to set this up, this is regarding the letter that we received from EPA in response to our October letter that the commissioner sent.
Yeah, and there's a lot of touchback on the subject we just spoke about as well, very interrelated. So basically, Sean mentioned we're problem solvers. We try to solve a problem. And, we're pretty good at doing that at the transmission and distribution level. That's definitely within our wheelhouse. So basically, when we're looking at the West End and we're looking at BPA and their response, at least so far, we're operating within certain parameters. You know, we understand that current contracts constraints preclude large generation projects until post-2028. Single utility and customer projects up to 200 kW are feasible. We're, in fact, encouraging our customers, and we're looking for opportunities for those projects for the very purpose and reason the board has conveyed today. Our practice is to collaborate with customers to facilitate and support all customer resiliency projects, especially since there's funding now available to make them cost viable. With respect to district resiliency grants, our current strategy is to identify projects that are most likely to be successful that might align with grant opportunities and the window of availability. And previously, we mentioned SWIM microgrids, Diamond Point overhead to underground project. And we're even trying to kick off the SWIM distribution scale battery as an opportunity as a microgrid in addition to our load shaping function originally envisioned. Okay, potential West End resiliency project. Okay, the Inflation Reduction Act resiliency infrastructure grants may be available to fund 50 to 70% of design and construction of these projects. We don't know if we'll get them, but there's the potential. If we were looking at the West End, for project solutions independent of BPA, it will be a challenge because they're an order of magnitude greater than anything within our experience. Like Sean said, we're used to dealing with $1 and $2 million projects or maybe even $5 or $10 million over a decade period, things that fit within our planned budget, capital plan that we know is cost feasible from a rate perspective. But that changes when you get to the $10 million, $20, $30, $40, $50 million range. So we did do some scoping based on prior scoping for the potential of a new PUD 115 kV transmission line between Joyce and Sappho. It'll pick up in the Joyce area near a Silverado substation. It'll head southwest, crossing DNR properties as well as Olympic National Forest properties, and route to the with that of Lake Crescent and Stryker Highway, where we have an overhead line that then could be conveyed all the way to Saffo. And that would be a redundant transmission line on a different route than the current BPA that would not be used normally, but could be switched over. We're also looking at, by expanding what we've done for the project for a distribution scale battery, we have theoretically the capability of implementing a large scale microgrid using lithium ion batteries that will cover load out west. And there's also options for somewhat lower cost emergency diesel generators in a substation. And we have the ability, based on prior analysis, to at least get ballpark answers on what those might look like. Now, West End load. So when we look at the West End, it has a peak load at 1 megawatt. The annual average load is 3.7 average megawatt. The light summer 24-hour load is about 9 megawatts. So basically, those are operational parameters we're looking at. Okay, if we were to look at the new transmission line, it would be 25 miles, Joyce to Saffo. It would tie into all existing 115 kV lines that we have between Discover Bay and Saffo. It could manually or automatically switch on BPA loss of power to either Joyce area or the West End. It would operate at 95% capacity factor. With that 5% when it doesn't operate, when both lines are hitting the same storm with an outage, then we'd have to at least remedy one of the problems before it would be built. Design and construction cost estimate ballpark is $27 million. An additional annual O&M of about $600,000. Probably a couple of employees for the additional infrastructure, but we would get a project life at about 60 years with grass bulbs. And there's cost of the West order of about $2 million. So basically, we would get off of BPA for us to serve fiber out west in conjunction with a middle mile project. The line could also be available to facilitate post 2028 generation projects, perhaps bypassing some local BPA lines, meaning we would have a connection from South PUD transmission. Maybe some unknowable benefits of that. Also, a battery. We could do a centrally located substation with 20 megawatt, 160 megawatt hour battery to serve during the BPA outages. It could be manually or automatically BPA on a loss of power. It would have a capacity factor of about 90%. And it could not serve all of the West End in real cold days in the wintertime due to load, so we'd have to isolate some customers, but normally it would. And in most cases, it could sustain over a 16-hour outage. Not always, but in some it could. Now, this is a very high design and construction cost estimate, about $51 million. Additional O&M, perhaps $1 million per year. And these are based on NREL estimates, so less. But if
John, you started with each one of these with an assumption in terms of how big it is, whatever it is here. And these are all pretty big stuff. I mean, do we have the ability to kind of scale back things and say we can?
The final bullet here, I'm going to talk about that.
Okay.
So basically, the project life is 30 years. We can conserve the batteries. And this is scalable to reduce cost and provide. If we don't have to supply the entire West End, you could scale this down proportionally to what you did want to supply or what we could supply. So the $51 million construction could be halved, and we could probably serve half the loads.
Yeah, and I guess, I'm not, in my view, I'm not trying to, in my head, suggest that we're going to do all this stuff and bingo, we're going to have this massive upgraded system. But I see pieces of things being done over time that, A, slowly build resiliency or capacity or something, but also builds knowledge and builds direction and builds capability from our staff and so forth like this, so that we're growing into this world that Ken talked about. And because when you, you know, take something like for me and just slam dunk, you know, 20 megawatts, you know, that's right. That's heavy hitting stuff.
No, absolutely. And we are trying to swim microgrid. That's what we're doing with the current projects that we're looking for grants. You know, even the ability to get a grant is a skill.
And I'll just throw in there, what John's presenting here, Jim, is just specific to solving the BPA West End transmission issue.
In a short time.
Okay.
But I do want to point out
that even there, can't you scale back? I mean, you could still scale back and say, just say for talking purposes, the McCall came along and somebody said, hey, we got $10 million. What can you do for us?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'll touch on that here in the next slide.
Okay,
so basically for battery microgrid planning estimate, ancillary benefits might include load shaping to reduce demand charges by $1.4 million per year. We don't know what that looks like yet. It'd take further analysis. It would open the door to add a potential 10-megawatt utility-scale post-2028 project if it could be co-located with 50 acres of land and solar generation. That would provide us 1.9 average megawatts or 2.4% of PD average load over the year. And according to NREL, it would be about $11 million capital, $200,000 per year cost to do so. So by doing this project, it does open the door to some opportunities that we have to consider, and we can't treat every project in isolation. Now, West End resiliency is tied into general resiliency, adding new sources, new potential, closing off opportunities, opening up opportunities. It's very complex. It could conceivably be used in conjunction with a customer post-2028 project, including wind. If we have a battery in Sappho and there's generation of wind in Nia Bay, that means they don't have to pass that unshaped to BPA. We might have the ability to shape with the batteries on the scale of the batteries we put into place. Now, on the other hand, there may be a restriction, though. If we built this project, we would close off opportunities for individual customers for net meter generation because the generation would exceed the load, something like that.
Okay, and this one
we do because we do this. We have experience. We back up facilities with diesel generation. We could place 20 megawatt capacity, or we could be more selective on capacity for emergency loads. And this could automatically switch and sectionalize the loss of BPA power. It have a capacity factor of about 90%. If it was at 20 megawatts, it would be a much lower capacity factor if we scale that down to, you know, 10 megawatts. Well, we have a pretty good idea of the infrastructure, and we can get a rough cost. Design and construction cost estimate, $15.3 million, $830,000 per year. We could get a long life out of it because it's low utilization. It's just basically for BPA planned and outages. And we can also spread it out and distribute it among substations. To reduce cost to a partial, which is similar to the microgrid. So just in a high level, looking at cost today, these projects are far bigger than anything in our experience. Now, the transmission line have expertise and knowledge in how to get that done. We probably do not have, within our labor constraints, the ability to design, which might cost to design this project within our existing resources. We'd probably have to go for a grant to seek funds for somebody to make the design. And if it's covered at a high cost, it might be desirable to do that. So basically, each of these projects have what we call a net present value based on a 4% cost of capital assumption, which is somewhat optimistic in today's environment, but historically, utilities is pretty normal. I would hope that the interest rates come down a little bit within a year or so. If they do, we might be back in focus. Now, we do need to true up the project lives. So I have a factor what I'll call a 30-year capitalization, which is basically to make the projects all the same term, 60 years. And then we have a rate impact with no grants and a rate impact with 70% grants. Just for your consideration. We understand that decisions can't be made based on what's presented here, but the information might be valuable as long as it's understood that things could be scalable. The opportunities might itself to make a decision that might touch on a big project, or at least the start of a big project. And of course, chance of success when you talk about grants, I'm sure. I think you can get a design grant at a higher probability than a construction grant. But if somebody designed it and it didn't cost us much, we at least know something for going for additional grants.
Can Pauline's EDC help with grant writing? I mean, I know that they've, you know, suggested that, but is it something that they technically might be able
to
help with?
They don't have anybody on staff yet to do that. We signed a letter of support for them to obtain funding for that, but I don't know in the near term when she would have somebody on staff.
Okay. And then BNL, another potential resource for
they're already
consultation.
Mm-hmm. They've helped us.
And Energy Northwest is offered their resources for grant writing too. And we've signed on to that for their assistance whenever we have a project that comes along. It's at our cost, but we've signed up for that with Energy Northwest.
Is that something you know about? Or?
Not any specific detail. So.
Yeah. Well, the current contract has them scoping and trying to match our projects and the projects of other affiliated PUDs to the grants as they come from Commerce, the Department of Energy, wherever. They try to marry up. They're the ones who encouraged us to try to expedite a distribution-scale battery because they believe that we have better chances getting funds for a larger project than a smaller project. So mentioned, they also have within their contract of time and materials for grant writing. And you know, we have some expertise. We've developed some expertise in-house through applications for grants, but, that's not necessarily our forte for
Well, the problem with grant writing is that it just takes so much time. That's really what it comes down to.
You have to write them in out of the gate.
Right.
You can't do a half-baked job and expect any success. Yeah. That's the challenge.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And the reason I'm presenting this, the action and some.
You know, I know we're getting some help from Northwest Energy, and that's great on grant writing, but, you know, we would be far better served to have a grant writer at our immediate disposal, whether that's, you know, a full-time temporary employee for the PUD, whether that's a full-time temporary employee shared by other agencies with the PUD. But, you know, having somebody here that can work with the PD staff and other agencies directly would be invaluable going after the secret spots. Because I absolutely believe that if we had that talent, that resource here at our disposal today, there's a lot of grants out there that we can probably be successful getting. You know, as far as the presentation, I mean, you know, to me, I'm smiling through half of it, because to me it's just a challenge. Okay, let's go out and figure out how to do it, you know. I mean, the numbers aren't that big. They're big for us today, but they're really not that huge, you know. And I feel like what we should be investing in today is to understand the problem clearly enough and document all of the, you know, what all aspects of the problem and all impacts of the underlying issues that would drive these projects forward. And I would be willing to bet that we would begin to see, you know, conditions and need at a level that would then make us, you know, a very good prospect for getting grants in addition to funding. I mean, the need's really there. I think we all know that, right? But documenting it clearly and carefully is the Because I just don't see any other way to solve the lithium problem without big investment. I mean,
there's no.
And, you know, the frustrating thing for probably a lot of ratepayers is they even have a discussion of rate increases directly as a result of projects that primarily support, you know, the West End is, you know, what do I get out of that? But that's part of the active and aggressive engagement with the public, you know, talking about these kinds of projects because we do all benefit. You know, the more everybody can prosper and thrive and be secure in every regard, the better we all succeed. And, you know, I think that that's entirely possible, too. So I would, all of this would fit nicely with, you know, a series of special meetings with PNNL and more input from staff and just start, you know, really engaging ourselves and the public in these conversations. I mean, this is what I ran on, quite honestly, you know, is doing more. This is what I consider individual. and clearly you guys have already spent a lot of time and effort on this. I just think we need to just keep pushing, finding it. I don't know if that helps.
Does the public have this memo?
No, it's only to the commission.
Okay.
I appreciate your time on us. I think we have enough information to move forward. And that's all I had on those two topics.
Okay. Well, and we should kind of keep this as a sort of an on deck kind of progress initiative. I mean, it could be combined with 2028 stuff because, you know, it's kind of.
Just one last thing for Commissioner Hayes. You had mentioned in your email to me, did you want to propose some specific questions that you want us to reach out to PNNL about?
Well, I think it would be good for us to draft a set of questions. I'm not sure, you know, they should just come for me. I'm not even sure I would know the exact right questions to ask. But I think.
Would you like staff to propose some to the commission?
Yeah, that's what I think would make sense. I mean, it, you know, based on what we just saw in the presentation, some of the conversations we've had, and even in previous conversations. But you know, my understanding from the short conversation I had is PNNL, you know, would do whatever it takes to help better educate the informants. They would bring all their heavy guns to a meeting or two.
Yeah, I'm happy to reach out to Melanie and schedule a future meeting.
That'd be great. Okay, then we'll move on. Correspondence, communications?
Nothing today, no.
And commissioner reports? I guess for me, the main thing we did was the meeting, you know, the workshop with Brian and so forth, and we've kind of just gone over it again, so I don't know what else to say about that. And I didn't have any other engagements other than trying to get a hold of the Macaw tribe about the workshop next week. Whatever. Anything?
I attended the Energy Northwest quarterly meeting. It was an interesting and long couple of days. The first thing that I'll mention is there was a resolution proposed to recognize Will Purser, and I actually moved to approve that. It was second and adopted, so that was nice to do. For Mr. Purser, then a lot of the meeting was working on electing new officers, reviewing board of directory policy revisions, which all seemed fairly minor. Incidental. There was a presentation from BPA whose name I forgot to note, and then also their attorney. There were a couple of comments that were made up front is that snowpack is already lower than expected, and that they will probably be requesting power from Columbia Generating Station to serve demand. Or the weather, cold weather that we're supposed to be getting here this month. There was a lot of discussion and questions to the BPA staff about serving new single large loads, a lot of what we've been talking about at the special meeting with the contract and today a little bit. was interesting for me to learn that since the 1980s, BPA hasn't served any new single large loads as an allocator. It's always, since that time, it's always through the local utility to find the source of power. Again, there was quite a bit of discussion about a lot of the same things we've been talking about here. The chief executive officer gave a report. They're getting ready to refuel and finish up some of their annual and every 4 year inspections and evaluations from the nuclear to the INPO and WANO member visits. Generally, those have gone well and they've received an exemplary finding on operations. They have a little bit of issue with some of the what they call it, the sort of the cross interaction between the maintenance and operations side and the actual operation of the power plant, which they scored in the exemplary category and all categories. They did report that they had a record run, 408 days. I think it was the longest run since they've been up and operating, and that they also achieved 83% of the nameplate capacity during that period. I had actually asked if it's possible to get a tour, and so I'm expecting to get a tour of the plant shut down for refueling.
Well, you get all the fun stuff.
I know, right? I said, can I bring my wife? And he said, oh, yeah, people do that all the time.
You definitely need to do the tour of the original Manhattan Project, too.
Yeah, so we get to see all of that. It'd be kind of interesting. I'm looking forward to that. That's not been scheduled yet, but in happy terms.
You got all the juicy assignments.
Share that with you all once we get to have that experience.
Okay, anything else?
Other than that, there was a lot of talk about new power, about the new nuclear, grant PUDs projects is probably out past 2030, 2032, and Site 1 is being negotiated with X Energy. And then there was sort of a razzle-dazzle presentation from the CEO and founder of X Energy, Cam Grafarian. It was dazzling, impressive, sort of inspiring, but it didn't seem to have hardly anything to do with nuclear, advanced nuclear here, but for providing energy for us. It had more to do with his vision for going to space, which was interesting and fascinating, which I do find that fascinating. It felt a little bit like a snake oil sales pitch to me, quite honestly. And the one thing I did want to share is, if we haven't already heard, we probably will get approached to help buy into the initial cost that they have to pay for 20% of the upfront development of a $2.5 billion project. My gut reaction, having written hundreds of millions of dollars of public works projects, is that 2.5 will probably be $4 billion. And so I don't know. We'll have a discussion about whether or not the utility that buys into that upfront. Anyway, the only other thing I did was go to the Swim Dungeness Chamber board meeting. The tourism's up, it's up 20% year over year. And the OMC representative said the hospitals and healthcare are still under a heavy strain. So, and Costco said that cost is coming down on meat and dairy products.
What group was this?
Well, that was the Swim Dungeness board.
Swim Dungeness. Thanks. Sound more optimistic than the PA folks.
Yes.
Okay, staff reports. Got one from Sean and Steve.
Actually, Steve's just going to give it.
Over the years, they had their own pension plan, and they basically underfunded it ever since it was initially created. And so now they want to switch over to PERS. And in order to do that, in order to get over to PERS, they have to make a they were coming to the member. So which will basically equate to $1 million per utility. And we've been going round and round with this several months now. Up with
$1 million would come out of our reserve.
More than likely, yeah, it would have to come out of our reserve.
Not budgeted.
Reserves out of.
And to complicate things, sorry to interrupt, Steve.
Go ahead, you're fine.
But to complicate things even more, not everybody has an equal share in knowing it. And so for them to expect each utility to pay an equal share of the loan doesn't seem right to me. And then to further complicate it, there's also two utilities looking to, maybe three, to get into knowing it. And so, you know, do they get off the hook if they come in after this? I mean, so there's just a lot of unanswered questions at this point. Yeah.
Utility that's a, has a 30% ownership share. We've got another utility that has less than 1% share, but everyone gets an equal vote. So that's another issue that we struggle with.
Mm-hmm.
For us, it really doesn't matter. We have a 10% share. So I've always told them, I said, we can go either way because we have a 10% share. If everyone had an equal share, we're still at 10%. So as far as Clallam is concerned, that's not an issue for us, but for some utilities, it is, especially for the ones that have a 30% share and the ones that have, you know, a less than 1% share.
So what's the risk in all this?
There really is no risk.
Well, there's risk on the KnowNet side that employees will get frustrated and quit.
Yeah, because if the board has already agreed, we've already agreed.
So the issue for them is, make sure I understand, is they need to transition to PERS life right away.
The $10 million shortfall.
But to do that, they have to buy into the
Correct.
Program. Okay.
Correct.
So they need the money today.
Well,
I mean, they can't.
It just gets worse because 6 months ago it was $7 million.
Just those people.
And we need them to succeed because we're dependent on their backbone.
Correct. All 10 of us do. And quite honestly, we get $15,000 a month from knowing that. So we actually get money from them. You know, we just don't give them money. They actually pay us. So I just wanted to kind of bring you up to speed a little bit on some of the particulars because we're going to have to make a decision at some point over the next couple of months. You know, based upon these new alternatives that we're going to be presented with as to what we want to do as a utility. So,
it sounds like $1 million loan, but reasonable for us to consider and a reasonably good use of reserves.
Well, and it's a loan, and we would get interest back. You know, it's not an assessment where we may not ever see it again.
But that would not happen unless all the parties were in agreement. Everyone is loaning their fair share.
Correct. And that's one of the major sticking points is the fact that not everyone's willing to do that. That's why we've told them to go back and come up with a couple of more alternatives.
And I believe the suggestion was rather than have the ratepayers fund a loan, go to a bank, but they were unable to successfully get a loan for them.
Correct. That's why we went for a grant last year and got a $10 million grant. Senator, I'm just bringing you up to speed on where it is, and I will come back after the next couple of board meetings and see what they have to say.
So what do you think? What's the critical path, or when do you feel a decision may have to be made?
Apparently, there's some magic number about April 1st that the decision has to be made in order to vest the existing pension members with 1,000 hours.
I think that's a. I think that was a DRS date, right?
Yeah, that's a retirement system date, cutoff date.
Thanks, Steve.
That's really all I have.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay.
No further staff. How board actions for staff? Got a list, huh?
To draft a list of proposed questions regarding the potential of coordinating the RNC project with CNNL for presentation to the board. And the second is to reach out to Melanie Jackson at CNNL on those after they're approved.
I would think the questions for PNNL would be more than just resilience, just looking at the energy future and what opportunities are for us here in Pasadena.
Okay.
And do we want to reword our business items to reflect that the BPA 2028 stuff also is incorporating these other initiatives? Or is that just complicated?
I'm not sure I followed that, Jim.
We have special meeting. You know, we've got this list that you guys put together that we got from the public, a lot of good stuff. And then we got BPA response to the October letter, which tied into that. And then we've got the post-2028 contract discussion. Those things are sort of...
They're all kind of intermingled,
I don't know if we... It's half a dozen or one six at a time, but whatever, we need to keep our eye on the ball. On these things have a tendency to disappear because they can get small and, we just forget about them. And then,
So do you want to change the wording of the business agenda items for BPA?
No, I think he's just saying we don't want to lose focus of it in the future.
Don't make it complicated, I guess, and that's what I'm probably doing. Okay. More board actions, Dak. Public comments, do we have any out there? Got a lot of public today. It's one here.
Probably should sign the documents before you get under the public session. There's one that Rick was supposed to sign, but I was not there. I didn't read it out.
I wasn't paying attention. Run that by me again.
There's one document in the group that Rick has to sign that you approved today, but I was not there.
Here. I need to sign for him is what you're saying. How do you want me to do it? Four?
I'll put down your four.
Okay. And I'm the only one that has to do that.
Okay. Yeah, 30 minutes.
Okay, then
We're the next item is an executive session. Sean, you want to set that up for us?
Yeah, we'll. It'll be about 30 minutes, and we do not expect any action to take place. And Eric, if you could put all the Zoom participants except for Dave Worley into the waiting room. Okay.
Okay. We are in session again, and the meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Commissioners.